Welcome to Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the paribas y abajos, ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who've made this podcast possible, makers of stellar gas permeable lenses and the oh-so-incredible custom stable scleral lens. In case you're wondering, I'm on the East Coast. My name is Dr. James Diem, and I'm joined by my talented co-host, reppin' Z West Coast. Not anymore.
The West Coast, kind of.
Yeah, the West Coast of something. Dr. Roy Habibi. You like what I did there? I threw a little Espanol in
it. It was very multilingual. I'm very proud of you. You're getting better.
Listen, I speak more Spanish than you on a daily basis.
I don't know.
In Costa Rica. Like 80% of my patients are Spanish. I'm not kidding.
80?
When I come home, yes. There are days when I see literally no English speaking patients in my Hazelton office.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's something. I should really be much better at it than I am, but I'm trying. I'm really trying, and I'm very much considering that course that you recommended.
That's true. I should start taking a little, type in Roya 25.
You should absolutely do that. Why don't you tell them? Yeah.
I know. I should.
I would love to be the first one to take advantage of that.
I'm a little influencer. Everyone's going to go ahead.
Roya 25.
Me.
Roya, biente, biente.
25. You
so anyway,
and
Roy
all the
Rica,
visitors
still.
Here that I'm talking to also trying to learn Spanish.
Yes.
But yeah, I am still 1 week officially in Costa Rica.
It's been amazing.
Okay. Yesterday we met with our architect design team, and we did a walkthrough of our space. I mean, this doesn't sound that different than most people
do as they cold open, but
we're like putting tape on the ground or drawing
with
dust.
Nothing is cold in Costa Rica. It's a sweltering hot open.
Sweltering hot. I am sitting. I turned my AC off so it wouldn't be blasting during the recording.
I'm just sitting in front of a fan,
just sweating it out.
Patrick walked by in his skibbies. This is what's going on when you're in Costa Rica.
Honestly,
melt
it's
if you don't.
Real hot. It's real hot. It is hitting peak summer right now. So we are just adapting
is that right?
and melting.
That's summer? It's summer there?
Are well, it's the hottest time of the year. It's the hottest time
right?
of the year right now.
Why mm-hmm. is that? Explain
I don't
that
know.
To me.
I don't How's know, if science or math or something. I don't even know. All I know is...
So does it get cooler?
No, but there's more wind or rain other times of the year. It's the driest, hottest, least windy, apparently.
No, didn't know that. Okay.
I learned that in the past 3 days that I've been here.
You're like, I got that an hour ago.
Yeah, I actually just...
Ronaldo, the guy next door.
Really, really learning things quickly here. But
all right, okay.
It's been amazing. Yeah, so we went and saw our space. So the space is like... Previously was like a coffee shop or something like that. So obviously there's walls and everything, but it needs built out inside. And we haven't started anything yet. Like we're finalizing our blueprints right now. We haven't even hired a construction company yet. And they keep telling us, okay, it's going to take 6 weeks to do. Now, how long does a build out usually take?
Man, I don't know. Longer than that, probably, but it just depends. I don't know.
I don't know how long the build out's going to take. They say 6 weeks. We're planning 3 months because,
that's probably
and
more
yeah, we'll see. But they say, I said, we think it's probably going to take more like 6 months or 3 months. She said, oh my God, if it takes that long, I'll be really ashamed of ourselves. I was like, okay.
Good.
Well, I sure hope you're right because
it just depends on, so many permits and different things could hold it up, So, I mean, if they were to get in there, have the equipment, have the material and have the manpower, they could probably do it in a week. But, it's all those little things, I know that the inspection.
Well, there's certain thing you need permits for.
Permits.
But this you don't need permits for.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's that'll be a saving grace for you.
Yeah.
So we'll get to learn along the way how you're doing and what's going on. And, we'll be looking for ways to get down there. I know that. That's for sure.
Well, I've been doing a much better job posting on our Instagram account. So everyone Thank should you. Go and follow along because yeah. there's some fun little videos and all the Love things, it. Little teasers. Cool. So everyone can feel like they live here too.
Love it. Good job. Good work. Good work. Well, we have a pretty interesting topic today, and I think it's very topical with everything going on in the world, and hopefully you enjoy it as much as we enjoyed being a part of this conversation. All right, so I was doing something that I say I should do less of, and that was perusing Facebook about 15 minutes ago, and as I was perusing Facebook, I read a post by a very infamous doctor that we are all, I think, you know, I think if you ran into her, you know, just at a meeting or at, you know, some sort of continuing education program or maybe on the streets of New York City, you would feel compelled to go up to her and speak to her because she's very interesting. And you get that by all of her posts and, you know, just good questions, witty comments, and good educational pieces as well. So, you know, I invited her on and she was so generous to share her time with us. It's late in the evening and
with no preparation, the normal no,
zero
way
preparation. This is how I do
talk.
Life. Yes,
but, those are but such it's, liars. I totally prepared.
Yes.
I told you three glasses of wine.
That's right.
That is
three
the
glasses
perfect
of wine.
Primer.
Hopefully, it was a good one. We'll get into that. And you know, the reason why is because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and she happens to be, you know, really, I think, an expert, obviously, on this part of the world because she grew up there. So, I just asked about 5 seconds ago how I pronounce your name. I think everybody knows who I'm talking about. But what was your response to that, Doc?
In which language would you like
there
me to
you
pronounce it?
Yes.
I said, I want to hear the real way. I want to hear the authentic way.
So here's the story. I was named Viola because my mom knew she was leaving Russia at the time and wanted to make sure that my sister and I had names that would not sound Russian. So I got Viola because she was reading Twelfth Night. And my sister got... My sister got ISIS because who knows what she was reading.
Oh, boy. You got the better end of that deal.
But then when we finally arrived in this country a bunch of years later, it was right after I had gone to first grade in Belgium. And the teacher there, when she had asked me what my name was, I didn't speak very much. I don't know what I spoke at that time. It wasn't French. But I just come here from Belgium, and in French, when I came here and they asked me to spell my name for an art project that we were doing in whatever, fourth grade, I said V-E-O-L-A because the French I is pronounced E. And so the teacher wrote it out with an English E, and I said, no. And I corrected her. I therefore got stood up in front of the class and made fun of because you see how... people who don't know English can't spell their own name even.
I
said, because in English we pronounce it Viola if we want to spell it that way. So I said, just pronounce it however the hell you want. So I became Viola here.
Okay, interesting.
But you can Love say it however you like. I don't really get insulted. I don't get involved in how you pronounce things and what you call things. And
oh, yes, very
not
good.
That
I like
important.
That. That's true. Well, I wrote it down. It's funny that you said about, you know, English. I wrote your name down in front of me here, V-E-E-O-L-A. So I remember how to say it correctly, Viola.
But really, most of my friends call me Viola.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Well, now I'm still confused, but I appreciate
it. Good. My mission is accomplished.
Yeah. Right. You did very well. So again, you know, we're going to get into the, you know, what we would like to talk about, but I think it would be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, who you are and, you know, what it is you do. And, you know, we have a lot of stuff that we could talk about. Maybe we're going to have a whole month segment on, you know, Viola and Viola. She's like, what did I sign up for? But I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you do.
How do you
that
become
is cool.
the number two optometrist in the nation? What got you to this point?
apparently there's someone who's much better than I am. I don't know.
Right.
I've heard that the elections were rigged.
Yeah. Lock them up. I like it. Nice. Well, let's go back to the beginning. Let's do it. Let's just hear, because it sounds like there's a very interesting background here, and we'll come back to present day, you know, as it relates to practice and everything you got going on. But so you grew up in, I'm just reading your background here on your website, the former Soviet Union. So for us idiot, Americans here, not that you are an American, obviously, but you understand what I'm saying. We don't, I don't know really what that means. And that sounds so ignorant, close-minded, but I'm being honest. And and I would like to know more about it. So can you please tell me what that means? Thank you.
So it's a very complicated and complex question, which we couldn't possibly answer in the space of a half hour.
Right.
But to make a very long story short, I was born in a city called Dnipropetrovsk, which is now called Dnipro, which is the Ukrainian version of the Russian version of the name. At the time, it is in the Ukraine, which... Okay. I've been yelled at tonight on Facebook not to call it the Ukraine.
You know what? It's funny. When I read that, I was like... And then I was messaging you, and I, and without even realizing, wrote the Ukraine, without even realizing
it. So here's the thing. When I learned English, and I learned English as a second language, we learned about this complicated, term, this complicated concept called articles, right?
Okay.
We don't have articles in Russian. We don't call things the table or the chair, and it's, or a chair, or it's... It's actually a very difficult concept to learn when you speak a different language.
Okay.
And the Ukraine in English, at this point, I assume it means that it is the territory of another country.
Oh, and interesting.
So
okay.
In Russian, you wouldn't call that anyway. You say Ukraina. You don't say...
That's it. Okay.
Something before that. And so Ukraina is Ukraine.
That's what you would say. Okay.
But
I didn't get the context.
Honestly,
there, to be honest.
It's such. So here's the nonsense. So I was born in Ukraine, which to my ear sounds funny because I wasn't taught to say it that way in English. Okay,
right.
So we called it the Ukraine. So it just sounds funny. It really. What does it matter? I don't know. If you want to, whatever you want to call it.
Maybe like saying the United States. I was born in the United States. We say the United States.
Yes, it's just exactly. And so it sounds funny to me. Okay, so that's the way I learned to speak. So, and again, there's many things that we now have to unlearn, right?
Sure. Yeah,
How we refer to people in the third person and lots of things that are difficult because they sound common, normal to our ear. And now language changes and language evolves, and that's totally fine. And I'm okay with that. But I don't like to call people out on mistakes that they made, things that they've learned in their childhood, because they're not doing it on purpose, not doing it to insult anyone.
No.
And I often, if I have a patient that has a pronoun that they would prefer that they are referred to, and it's difficult for me to, because, you may or may not know, I see a lot of kids in my practice. They come into my practice, they might be a particular pronoun or gender assigned at birth. And as they grow up with me, I've known them many years, and all of a sudden the parents, and they come in and tell me I've changed my gender assigned designation, and now they want to be called something else. So my response to that will be is, I apologize in advance. I'm used to calling you a certain way. I may make a mistake. Please correct me if I make the mistake. But there's no insult involved. They know me for many years. That's not a problem. Yeah. I think that's okay.
I like that approach.
I think that's okay.
Well, if we could just do that with so many things, right?
Yeah,
like so many things.
Exactly.
Like me just admitting that I'm a dummy when it comes to what's going on.
Of course.
In Ukraine
and
Russia.
Okay.
I don't know.
So again, I apologize for anyone who might be insulted by my calling it the Ukraine. I will.
No one's insulted. Forget about it.
But remember, if I were to speak Russian to you, if I were to speak Russian to you,
I mean that.
I would just say Ukraina, and then problem solved.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
So that's where I was born. At the time, the city was called Dnipropetrovsk. It is now called Dnipro. I don't actually speak Ukrainian, although I just discovered recently that I understand it fairly well. I never knew that. When I was a kid, it was not taught in the schools. Not that I ever went to school in the Soviet Union. I went to nursery school, but I left when I was 4 and a half. I do speak fluent Russian, but at the time, even my parents, who, by the way, my family goes back in Ukraine for probably 400 years. Wow. But they never, but they, my grandparents don't speak Ukrainian, because we are Jewish, right? So when I was in the former Soviet Union, and we call it the former Soviet Union because it no longer exists, but all those territories were part of the larger empire.
Okay. Right.
So when a Jewish kid was born in the Ukraine, their passport was stamped with a nationality or in the Soviet Union. And for a Ukrainian, it would have been Ukrainian. For a Georgian, it would have been Georgian. For an Uzbekistan kid, you're born in Uzbekistan, it would be called Uzbekistani. But if you were Jewish, no matter where you were born, it was marked Jew.
Really? Right?
So when I first came to this country, we didn't, you know, I didn't speak any English, and kids would ask me, where are you from? We would say the Soviet Union. After a while, it no longer existed, so then you had to say where you're from. So we would say Russia, because that was the larger entity that everyone was familiar with. Who the heck knew what Ukraine was or any of these republics were? No one knew here. I'm talking about, I was, you know, before the age of 12, kids knew nothing, right? So I would say I'm Russian. And or rather, they would ask me, are you Russian? I'd say, okay, sure, I'm Russian.
Good enough.
But if you asked a Russian, they would call me a Jew.
Interesting.
Right.
Then things started getting hairier, and people say, well, where were you actually born? My passport says Ukraine. So they say, oh, you're Ukrainian. But I'm certainly no Ukrainian on planet Earth would call me Ukrainian. They call me a Jew.
Okay.
So the whole concept is nonsensical. Honestly, at this point in the 21st century, with our global economy and everything that goes on and the way we talk to each other all over the world, does it really make sense to have borders anymore? And you're American and I'm Ukrainian and I'm Russian and I'm Slovakian or Slovenian or Turkish. Does it really matter, or should we stop because we're all burning up our same planet together and realize that we all live on the same planet and we have enough genetic information and biological information and science to know that, you know what, COVID kills everyone. They don't really care who you are and what your genes say. And really, are we, if you look at the just our genetic code, are you really any different from me? Absolutely not, right? So at what point do we call shenanigans and all this and say a child is a child, and wherever they are, they need protection and they need 100%. An adult to help them, and I don't care what the borders are, and this is just crazy. What's going on is crazy.
It is crazy.
And so what was it like growing up for you, you know, in, like, if you could go back to the Soviet Union in your mind, what was there anything that sticks out as being different, unique, difficult, challenging, that you could kind of paint a picture of what it was like, why your family fought so hard to leave?
So
if that's correct.
My grandparents first tried to leave in the 50s. My grandfather spent 10 years in Siberia because Stalin sent him there. And I'm horrified to see that after 30 years of trying to get rid of Stalin, we're all of a sudden back to the same place. Yeah. And I feel like Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini, Napoleon, you know, on and on and on. Why does history repeat itself constantly and we wind up with the same crappy megalomaniacal dictator that everyone is willing to follow because they're terrified? So there's a lot of history that goes into that, and you can analyze it.
Is fear what builds up these people's power?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, when how do they even get there?
When you live under a regime all your life, and not just all your life, but many, many generations back, where you're used to not having a voice, being terrified, knowing that your neighbor will denounce you within a second.
True.
It's very different. People who grew up in a truly free country where they can mouth off anytime they want, where you can post whatever you want on Facebook anytime you want, and there's really no repercussions. Maybe someone will call you out for it. Somebody might block you. Somebody might get mad.
Right.
That's it. But there's a very different repercussion when I remember as a child that an inspector came to your house and your mother put you in a bathtub behind a shower curtain and said, at age three, and said, don't make a sound.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they find you, you don't have a permission to live in the town that you're living, and they will take you away. And you sat there and shut up and were quiet for however many hours it took your mother to get the inspector drunk so they would leave the house and leave them alone, because some neighbor denounced you that you lived where you didn't have what was called a prapiska or permission to live there. That's a very different regime. And I left 100%. That regime when I was four, so I can certainly mouth off. Now, don't get me wrong. There's still people who live under that regime that learn to mouth off and will say what they want at their own peril. But that's not everyone. And it's hard to do that when you have young children dependent on you, when you have old parents dependent on you and grandparents dependent on you, and when you know that they can be dragged off at any second and shot.
Yeah. 100%.
Right? So and we have people in this country who say, you know what? I had a patient complain to me today about the price of gas. And I said, really?
Yeah.
Like, really? You're going to complain about gas?
I know.
You live in
perspective is so bad right now.
$7 million apartment.
Yeah.
Right? You have everything.
You don't even have a car,
your kids
probably.
Go to private school. You probably have three cars.
Yeah. Yes. Just sit around, right? Yeah.
And you don't need them, any of them.
Right. Right.
And frankly, okay. So guess what? If you keep using gas, if we don't blow each other up with a nuclear weapon anytime soon, then our planet is burning because of global warming. So maybe you should talk about not using that gas. Maybe this is a good thing, the gas prices are going
up.
So there's so many levels of awful that we don't consider doing, what we're handing off to our children in the future generations, if anything, that I don't know. It makes me all really, really upset.
So you were four then, and you left the Soviet Union to go to where? What was the next step?
So we went, this exodus that is happening from Ukraine brings back so
Poland
many
flashbacks. And Belarus and all these
because
other
places. I left, we had, when we got our permission to leave, my mother and I had, a week to go. Basically, they gave you permission to leave. You had
a
week
like
to pack up.
Is that like a lottery? How does that happen? How do you even get that
permission?
No,
it was not a lottery. We were the first person. Dnipropetrovsk was a closed city because it had military installations in it. And we were the first two people to leave officially, my mother and I, from Dnipropetrovsk. We had 6 days to pack up our things and get out. My mother spent every dime that she had to drag me around to every show, every museum, every play that she could possibly get me to, every ballet, every opera, because she said to me, there's a lot of culture here that you will never see again in your life, and I want you to remember it.
Oh, interesting.
And I do remember
that's
it.
Awesome.
And then we packed up. She had me in one hand and a suitcase in the other. That suitcase contained a change of underwear and some children's records, which I actually found out last week. The reason she had the children's records was that her very good friend, who is now her husband, but at the time was just her friend, who is a very famous artist now, but gave her a couple of drawings, and she hid them in the jackets of those records. And he said to her,
goodness,
they're worth money in the West. If you need money, sell them. I kind of wondered, why is she like, who packs a couple of children's records when you're leaving the country forever with nothing? And she still has those drawings. She never actually sold them.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
So interesting.
But that's how we left. And I remember my hand hurting because she was holding on so tight that I kept saying, Mom, you're hurting my hands. And because she was terrified to lose me in the crowd. And we went on a train to Austria. We spent a night in the train station crowded, not knowing where we're going. The train stopped every few hours we were taken off the train, and there were, in my memory, people with machine guns checking documents. And then we got to Austria, then we got on a plane and went to Israel. We got out of Israel, and I remember people getting off the plane and kissing the ground. I was a kid. And then we lived in Israel for a while. We were settled on a kibbutz, which at that time was truly, truly communist, meaning you went to a bunk where you got your kind of, they look like scrubs, like you're in your size, like you picked up clean scrubs for the day, you wore them. The kids all lived in one bunk and the parents, the adults circulated, like somebody would watch the kids one day, somebody did milk the cows one day. So, but no one owned anything and no one did. And my mother took a look at this and said, oh my God, we didn't leave. We literally left the Soviet Union for this. This is not happening.
It's the kibbutz.
So she got us. We quickly were resettled into an apartment in Netanya, which is now a beautiful resort. But at the time, were a bunch of high rises that were being built on the beach because the terrorists were coming up on the beach, and nobody else wanted to live there. It was in 72, so it was a war in Israel, and we left the. We left the day that the bus in front of me on the way to nursery school, the school bus, in, like in front of my school bus on the way to nursery school, blew up with a bomb.
Oh my goodness.
And my mom locked the door and said, we're leaving. Wherever we go, we're leaving.
Oh my God.
So we went on to Belgium. I went to first grade there. We lived there for close to a year. My sister was born there. And no other country would take you at that time until the child was born because they don't want to give you citizenship. So we had to wait.
Right.
And then we had relatives in Canada and in the United States. And whoever gave us a visa first, we were just sitting and waiting. So we wound up in Florida with our relatives. We lived there for 4 years and then came to New York and et cetera. So that's the short story.
Love that. That's fantastic.
But this most recent, so this kid that I'm trying to get out is from the city where I was born.
So let's give a little background to everybody, because maybe not everybody saw your post. So how did that come about, and what exactly are you attempting to do?
So my family has been doing this project called the Ship of Tolerance for many years now, which brings together children from different cultures, different backgrounds, different religions, different countries to work together over their language barriers, over their religious barriers, over their cultural barriers, over their socioeconomic barriers to collaborate in music and in art, because those we consider universal languages, and to work together and build bridges so that as they grow up, they learn that they're really part of one planet, and it doesn't matter where they come from. They can always collaborate and work together and be friends. So we've been doing that for a bunch of years. We've done it in 17 countries now.
Wow.
And so as part of that project, I run the concerts for that project. It's art, it's music, and so forth, but I stage the concerts for that.
Cool.
And these two boys, so we've met many children over the years from Cuba, from Moscow, from Ukraine, from every country. It started in Egypt. And we keep in touch with them. It's really lovely. They keep in touch with each other. We keep in touch with them. So when this happened, we have these two brothers from Ukraine. One is a percussionist. One is an oboe player. And when this started happening, I immediately, of course, contacted their mom and said, how are you guys doing? What's going on? Do you want to take them out of the country? This is right before the Russia invasion.
You knew it was going to happen, yeah.
And she said, no, I mean, they're in school, you know, the normal things. They're in school. Let's wait. Let's see what happens. Then they declared martial law. The older one has just now turned 20. So he and his father cannot leave because they're
possibly after
a military age. But the little one is 15. So I said, at least bring him out. And she said, I don't know. I have elderly parents. He's shy. He doesn't like, how is he going to get out by himself? I said, okay, we'll go with him. And we actually had, my mom has, through her work and her art, has friends all over the world. And we actually got someone to, who said, look, we have a car. We have one seat in a car. We'll drive him out of his city to Poland. But she was too scared to put him in the car by himself. So we said, all right, however you can, get onto whatever transportation you can. We wired her some money. She decided to go by train and bus and so forth, first to Poland, to Lviv, and then to Berlin, where we have a family who are friends of ours that said we'll host them for as long as we need to until you can take them to the States. So crazy journey, because she spent what should have been an hour drive to the Polish border or I think maximum 5 hours by train, something like that. Took 18 hours on an overcrowded train, which, you know, normally the train car has four people per berth. She said there were about 10 people in that berth, kids sleeping in luggage racks.
Oh, my goodness.
Just awful. And of course, they gave their seats to women with younger children, all women and children for the most part. That train kept kept stopping once in a while every time there was an air raid or on an alert, and the cars would go dark.
Oh, my God.
You know, and quiet for the air raid. And honestly, it brought back flashbacks of that train ride that I had when it was four. And I really remember that well. And how I, you know, little kids, they're not as scared because it's like an adventure. Their parents, if you have a good parent, they'll tell you a story. My mom made it like a whole adventure. I thought it was fun.
Right.
But at 14, this kid is 15. At 15, you understand what's going on. It's terrifying. Yep. You've left your father behind, your brother behind, and you're going through a war zone. You don't know where. So they arrived finally in Lviv. They called me from there, of course, because of all the delays. They missed their bus connection. You know, she's terrified. She doesn't know where to stay. We have friends. I called a good friend, said, who's from Poland. I said, hey, he's here. He's in the States. But I said, do you know anyone that can help them? He immediately called a friend who's a cab driver in the north of Poland. I mean, Poland's a big country, too. And said, yeah, I can pick him up, but it'll take me 12 hours.
Oh my God.
By that time, we found someone else who brought them warmer clothing, who found them a place to eat, who found them a hostel to stay in overnight. The next morning, they managed to get them a train ticket.
Oh, wow.
Both of them, they got on a train. I mean, the whole thing was crazy. When she was on the bus, she said, I said, I'm so sorry I made you do this. You know, like, you don't know what to say. You know, I said, so sorry. You're sitting on this bus for 18 hours with no food. It's crazy. She said, it's okay, at least we're warm. And then she sent me a video from outside the bus window, and there are thousands of women holding infants and children walking to the border.
Oh my God.
Right.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's just all sorts, like, indescribable. People say, oh, it's fake news. This is not fake news. This is not fake news. Nothing about this is fake. So anyway, so they got finally, I want to say what should have been a maximum of 10-hour trip. 3 days later, they got to Berlin. The family that we know there met them. You know, how they're in their apartment now. They're safe. They're warm. They're good. But now, I said, why don't you come? I said to his mom, I said, why don't you come with him to New York? And she said, look, I can't. I know you. I know that he'll be safe with you if I send him. But I can't leave my other son. He's 20. If my husband gets drafted first and my son is by himself, you know, it's like, who do you say first? You have two kids. Right. Who do you say first? Yeah. Right. So she's going to go back. So as soon as she gets them on the plane to the States, she's going to go back.
Oh, my God.
And her parents are elderly and so forth, right? So I want to get him a visa to come to New York. And this is not the simplest thing because the United States, all the European countries have waived visas for the refugees, but the U.S. has not yet.
Right.
We do have some concerts planned for the Ship of Tolerance that got delayed by COVID. So, and he has been participating in our projects over the years. So we're trying to get him a visa the same way we've gotten him a visa before, saying that he needs to rehearse for these concerts. He needs to be here. But they're giving us trouble even with that. We can't even get an appointment. So they called originally the consulate in Berlin and the U.S. consulate in Berlin to get a visa. And they said, oh, you have to get a visa from your home country, which is, I'm sure it's just some stupid bureaucratic answer.
Of course.
But first of all, you close your consulate in your home country and you want to send a 15-year-old back into a war zone. I mean,
yeah, no.
So, again, I don't want to blame anyone. I think it was just a bureaucratic answer. But you have to also understand that they're calling. They don't speak German. They don't, you know, they don't really speak English well. It's all sorts of levels of craziness. So we're trying. I'm literally just, you know, asking everyone I know, every patient, everyone I've ever met, all of Facebook, to help me find someone in government that can help speed this through. We actually have a lawyer that is helping us speed this through now.
That's great.
Pro bono. We've also been raising money to help people on the ground. We're up to almost $20,000 in donations,
which is awesome.
I really, from the bottom of my heart, thank everyone who's
Where are good ways? I was going to say, is it through the Ship of Tolerance, or how are you doing?
So we have our website is up. You can donate directly to shipoftolerance.org. And you can indicate, because when we started this, we were just collecting money to help Save the Children of Ukraine donate money. So we were just channeling all the donations into Save the Children. But they take us, although it's small, but they do take a small administrative fee. Right. Whereas we will not. We will just send it all directly to people on the ground that we know to distribute. So we're now giving people the option. You can donate there and you can choose if you want us to send it directly to Save the Children, or let us keep the money and we'll distribute it to people that we know personally. Either way is totally fine. There are many good charities that you can donate to. I've had people send me, so with the, by the way, and she also traveled, this woman and her son also traveled with another family. Her friend has a daughter who's 14 and is diabetic. And of course is running out of insulin and so forth on this crazy long trip. I've already had two people send me pumps, you know, insulin pumps and all the supplies. So I'm waiting to see where I ship those to, because I'm still waiting for the pump to arrive. I have all the supplies, but not the pump itself. And that's, you know, I didn't even realize I don't have any diabetic children. That's a $7,000 item.
Whoa.
And people were just so kind and generous. I have to say my optometric colleagues have really stepped up. People are sending me all sorts of things, both money donations, insulin, monitors, sensors, all sorts of stuff, which was going to be incredibly helpful. And by the way, without prescriptions, without all the rigmarole, and now I'm going to send it on. So I really am grateful for the way people are stepping up.
It is tragic to watch. Yeah, it's tragic to watch all this happening. And it actually just makes me feel guilty that I'm having a good day some days, right? And then somebody on the other side of the world is on a 16-hour bus trip with their child and it's cold outside. You know, you feel a little helpless too when you're this far away.
You know, I said that to my mom because I've slept all of maybe 4 hours in 17 days or so, whatever how long it's been.
Yeah.
And my eyelid is really twitching, and I've tried all the usual magnesium and tonic water and all that.
Tonic water.
A constantly spasming eye.
You're going to need to get a little Botox. That's going to be your only cure, or sleep.
Exactly. And my mom had some really good advice for me. She said, look, stop watching all the news and stop looking at every single thing and feeling guilty, because that makes you helpless, and that makes you feel guilty, but helpless and useless. So instead, focus on one person at a time, help that person, finish, go to the next person. And that is how you make a difference.
Yeah,
and if you think about it, think about what you do all day. You walk into an exam room, you focus on one person, you help them, you finish, you go to the next person. You start thinking about your whole schedule that day, and oh my God, I have 40 more patients to see, and I think we're gonna myself that I really care. Yeah. What happens? You say, just shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And stop complaining about your eyes, and you just don't care. You can't help anyone that way, right?
Yeah. You know, this is a little bit of a digression, but do you guys, we just hired a new doctor, and I was wondering, do you look at your schedule like at the beginning of the day? Do you monitor it throughout the day, or just kind of cruise through? And I'm not right or wrong, Dr. Viola, what do you do?
Gosh, if I really want to have a nasty day, I look at it the day before.
The day before, even. Oh yeah,
because if you've been practicing long enough and you know your patients well enough, just never do that.
Then you're thinking about it.
I'm gonna have to talk about
because,
this
oh
that,
no
or,
like,
you know,
well, actually,
all the time.
Yeah, the worst patient on planet Earth is coming in tomorrow.
then you're extra apprehensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, I had
and
a
it
good.
Turns out they're totally fine, right?
And then they're on their extra special behavior that day. We had a listener message in the other day. Dr. Kayla Oding, she practices in Cleveland, Ohio, actually, but she sent in a couple questions, and I think it would be great, especially as the number two optometrist in the world. We need your feedback. I know that this has come up.
I just find that like so insulting. Could you imagine somebody calls you number two all day long?
I know. You're like, hey.
No one's going to debate that spot. You know, you can call yourself number two all day, and everybody's going to be like, That's nice that she admits that, you know?
Like, I mean, I'm probably like 7,027,000, right? Like, what is our numbers? I don't even know.
We say number even two, and no one's going to fight you on it.
You guys know what popularity contests are, right? Anyway, we take ahead. All of this with a grain of salt. Yeah.
Hey, it's all right. Still. Here's the question that they submitted, or Dr. Olding said. She wants to hear us discuss a little bit about the unreasonable problem patient, right? So, like, I know this is totally opposite of what we're talking about. I'm talking about complainers here, but...
No, not really, you know?
Yeah, but, like, what do you do from, like, a management standpoint? How do you hand someone who's just really difficult to work with?
You don't have any of those patients in down there in Manhattan, right?
No.
They're all nice and polite and open the doors for you.
Patients are, you listen know, rainbows you come out of their eyes all day long. I actually change the subject when they start with their really, really unreasonable craziness. I will change the subject. I will actually do the thing that everyone says never to do. I will discuss politics or the state of the world or something else. Yeah. Or I'll ask, like, hey, how are your kids been doing? I know it's been a really hard time.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's been really hard for you. You know, because if you read through their unreasonable complaints, why are patients unreasonable? It's probably because they've had a tough time or they're unhappy about something, right? Right. So it's not really because of their eyes. It's because they want to talk about something else that has really made either their life difficult or their week difficult or their month difficult or whatever it is. So go right through that and get to the crux of the matter. Is it because they have a child that is struggling in school? Is it because they have a parent that's ailing and they're having to take care of? Is it because they have a bad relationship with their spouse? Is it because they have an awful job that's really been hard? So just ask them. It's okay. Yeah. And it immediately stops their unreasonable complaints. They will tell you what's happened and what's wrong.
It humanizes them a little bit.
And it actually, they will 9 times out of 10 apologize and say, you know what? I'm sorry. I know I'm being crazy about the glass of the eyes. They will.
Yeah. Yeah.
To get over it. Yeah. They start to see that you're not against them. You're for them. You support them. You're listening to them. No. Then they let down their guard a little bit.
You know, my husband taught me a good trick once. He did improv theater for a while.
Right. Yeah.
So there's first rule of improv is if I say something, you never contradict me. You say yes and not no, but yes and. So if the patient says, the glasses you gave me are awful. I can't see anything. You don't say, no, what do you mean? You say, yes, I agree. That's awful. So, and continue with whatever else.
Right.
Right.
And never, I think you're wrong. Contradict them. Right. Yes.
No.
You're crazy. No. I'm just kidding. No, that's not right. I like that. No, that's beautiful. And I love the change of subject. I'm going to use both of those things probably tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I wonder if either one of you have heard this before, because I've heard this twice now in last like week or two. Second opinions, patients that have seen our ophthalmological colleagues, nothing against an ophthalmologist. This is just two examples, and it just happens to be in the same week, two different local ophthalmologists in my area. And I just wonder if any of you have ever heard this or ever tried it. And it was not a necessarily unreasonable complaint. It was a complaint that I'm sure was difficult to deal with. There were surgical unexpected results, right? Okay, so not terrible, but difficult and certainly frustrating. So in both cases, I discuss this with the patient. I feel like we sort of won them over. Anyway, at the end of this conversation, both of them thanked me for not, one, putting my hand on their leg and looking them in the eyes and saying, is everything okay? Like, you know, so yeah, like, and they're elderly women.
I see what you mean.
Elderly
like
women.
Like talking down to them and saying, are you doing okay?
Not in a sexual way. No, not like that. But just like patting them you know, like on their leg. Like, and I just
like a condescending
never,
thing.
It's never crossed my mind to do that, but I could totally see it happening, like in an exam room where somebody would just be like, you know, like, and I almost wonder now that I hear it twice, if that's something that is taught or seen and emulated. Have either one of you have ever heard that, seen it, observed it? Am I the only one? Is this crazy? Is this just happening in Pennsylvania?
I think you're the only one.
Okay. I want people to call in on that.
I've never heard someone say that, but I can.
Okay. I will confess that early on in my career, I did vision therapy. And I remember I always kept the parent in the room with me, but I had a mom like hang out in the back, and I had this little boy that was being a pain, and he just didn't want to do whatever exercise I was giving him to do. And I patted him on the shoulder and said, "Come on, Johnny, you can do this." And the kid shouts out, "Bad touch!
Oh, get out!"
And I completely freaked out, right? Because that was what they were telling him to do in school, like if someone touched him in an inappropriate way.
Right,
and the mother, and I froze. I was like, okay, my life and career is now over. And the mom from the back said, "Johnny, that's not what bad touch means."
Yeah.
You know, she was there, and I said, "Never touch a patient again."
That was the last time we ever did a touch.
I don't know that.
Yeah, that's not something I mean, heard of.
Yeah.
Well, real quick, I want to dive into something else, and you know, we've already kept you for, you know, beyond what we said we would, but it looks like you're having fun. You're starting your fourth glass of wine now. I'm just kidding. No, she's not. She's not actually doing that.
There's no wine in my house.
Nothing. You know, real quick, tell me about the inspiration regarding, you know, your practice model. And I know we don't have a ton of time to talk, but, you know, I think it's widely known, at least I believe to be true, that you don't accept insurance. Is that correct?
You don't accept
vision plans. You do medical insurance.
I accept Medicare and one medical insurance where I'm contracted to see just their kids. They have their own clinics, but the kids that they can't deal with that are difficult, they send to me. But even that, I'm contracted to be paid at my normal rates. Okay. So I don't accept, and no other vision plans, no other insurance, no.
Okay. And so I would assume then a relatively significant portion of your business is cash or out of pocket. Is that correct assumption or not?
That is correct. That is correct.
So what was the genesis? I mean, I think it's a relatively easy answer. Probably everybody could guess why, but.
So when I first opened Cold, I did take VSP and we did it for about 2 years. Granted, when was that? In 2007.
Okay.
Granted, we're in a neighborhood which is affluent enough that I can do that.
Do you mind telling us about your neighborhood a little bit? Because I think it's unique.
Yeah. I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Now I moved here back in the day when it was not such a great neighborhood. I used to have to know my local drug dealers by name in order to go down that block so they wouldn't accost me. But certainly it has changed, and I think we now call it the Gold Coast of Manhattan. It's quite a wealthy neighborhood. So people can certainly afford that. And many of the patients here, even who can't afford it, have insurances that do allow out-of-network coverage and so forth.
Okay.
During difficult times of, you know, when the last time the market crashed or during COVID, if I ever get the sense that a patient has told me that they've lost their job, or if I get the sense during my conversation with a patient that they're not able to afford fees, we don't have a discussion about it, but I will put a note on my chart so that the staff at the front desk knows to either reduce the fee or not charge a fee. There's never a discussion about it. We never tell the patient that, or I don't want them to feel like they're asking for charity or receiving charity or anything like that.
Right.
I took to VSP for 2 years, and what I found was those patients really drove me crazy. And I mean, they did. They were shoppers. They would come in with their, you know, this 40 different VSP plans. And maybe we were just stupid about it. We don't know how to use it. But they'd come in. They'd want to, like, a full rundown of how much did the glasses cost, how much does the exam cost. All right, now let me take pictures of all the frames. I'm going to go next door and see what I can get somewhere else. And finally, I said, I just can't do this because we're taking up all of our appointment slots and booked out 3 months. And right. for these people that just drive me crazy. So we cut out all VSP. And that was really the only thing we took to begin with. My son at the time, who I think was 13, did this calculation for me and said, Mom, even if 70% of those patients leave, you're still making the same amount of money, right? So why are you going to bother?
So yeah, Wall Street now? What's he doing? He's
right. He actually started Bitcoin.
He's actually he's a violinist, but he codes for a living.
Yeah. So, and seriously?
He's in Syracuse playing a concert.
Oh, very
today.
Cool.
But it's again, not a complicated concept. I will never understand all these ODs that whine and complain and tell me how miserable they are taking these plans.
Right.
But continue to take the plans. So just don't make your
Some
life miserable.
Some people just feel
Shut
super
up or
like,
change.
I think I've lost your audio. Right. Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you. Yep, we got you.
All right. I'll just keep talking.
Sometimes I think people do
so
feel...
So we dropped VSP. We probably lost those patients for about a year and a half. And all of a sudden, 2 years later, they started coming back. And we kept saying to them, we don't take your plan anymore. And they're like, that's okay. I'm like, no, you don't understand. We're not in network in any way. You're not going to get reimbursed. Go across the street. They take your plan. No, it's okay. Well, why not? We've been across the street. We don't want to go there. So, you know, there's something that's lost when you take so many plans that you have to see twice as the number of patients in order to be able to survive. These are not bad doctors. They don't want to provide inferior care. But if I want to pay my staff and pay their health insurance and pay my rent and provide good service to the patients, then in order for that same fee, I would have to see twice the number of patients, right?
100%.
So of course it's going to suffer. And so we were okay. We never went back to it. I never dropped Medicare because, I don't know, I feel guilty. These are people that paid into it all their life. They should get something back for it. And then this one plan that is just kids, because I enjoy seeing them. They're difficult. Nobody else really wants to see them. And they're really... it's just fun. That's just something I can do that's fun.
Totally.
But that's it. But again, I know that not everyone can do that. That's not everyone's... It's just the economy doesn't
not
support
everyone's
that in every
model.
Area. Right.
True.
So last question. We thank you so much for hopping on with us tonight. And my goodness, what a wealth of knowledge and also
wealth of nonsense.
What a wealth of knowledge.
And minutia.
But no, I mean, to hear, you know, firsthand what it was like to grow up, you know, in the Soviet Union and, you know, how you got here. It really is very, very, very impressive and enlightening. And moreover, to speak about impressiveness and enlightening, we need to know one last thing about you. And this will wrap everything
very
together
important.
Very nicely. So, Roya, go ahead and ask the final question.
We ask all of our guests this. We want to know what your spirit animal is. This is the animal that defines your personality. Who you are when people see it. I mean, obviously they just heard you talk and we got an idea of your personality, but
she's going to say that's what it is.
We need to know. But
my spirit animal is sleeping right over here. Look.
Yeah.
Say hello, spirit animal.
Oh.
It's my Kerry Blue Terrier.
Oh,
I love him because he has no eyes.
Oh, get
he's
out.
Blind. Or you just can't see them.
Well, he's got kind of bangs that go like this.
Okay.
Whenever I walk him on the street, kids are always going on about him. Oh my God, he has no eyes.
They're like, yes, I'm an eye doctor, and I put him in a little boy who didn't have eyes. Cool.
I love
Wonderful.
It.
Wonderful. Well, listen, we could not be more thankful for you sharing your time with us. We're going to put a link in the show notes on how people can support all the wonderful things that you're doing. With
Thank you,
your,
guys. I appreciate
efforts.
It.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you.
And by
you.
The way, where do you hail from? It's really nice to meet you.
Jimmy hails from the close to you.
Yeah, not too far away.
Yep.
Where are you?
Northeastern Pennsylvania, Pocono region. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I have relocated myself. I am in Costa Rica. I have just moved to Costa Rica.
How
and I'm
beautiful.
Tamarindo.
I have been there. It is beautiful.
No wonder. I sure think
no wonder you're glowing. Other people can't.
Yep. I just moved here less than 1 week ago. About to open a clinic.
That's wonderful.
So I'm going to be hopefully following your model of not taking any insurance.
Excellent.
I'm just gleaming all these beautiful ideas.
I think you're in the plastic surgery capital of the world.
Hey, you know,
is that right? Is that right?
Yes, they do a lot of medical tourism there.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know about the facts. It could be the second most, you know. I was just kidding. I have an idea.
Behind, you know, Venezuela or something.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, second most is where you really want to be.
I like it.
Exactly.
I'm with you.
Exactly.
I think
Lisa's
it's a good
on
place.
The podium somewhere.
Less pressure. Exactly.
Yeah. That's right. Cool. Yep.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Well, that's it. Before we go, reach out to us for feedback, questions, stories, things you want us to talk about, either through email or on our Instagram or Facebook. We can't depart without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for their support, both the amazing lenses they make and the great people they are to work with. And be sure and tune in and listen to our next episode. But until then, try not to blink.